Happy Easter, prodigals!
Are you saying hoppy?
No.
I'm saying happy.
Yeah.
Okay, let's try that again. I swear, I thought you were saying hoppy.
No, happy.
Okay. Ready?
Yep.
Happy Easter, prodigal!
You're not saying hoppy?
No, I'm saying happy Easter.
Okay, yeah. All right. We're so glad you guys decided to join us today as we celebrate our risen Savior together. We just finished Holy Week, and we want to give a huge thank you to everyone who gave their time to contribute to our daily devotionals. These are amazing every year, and this year was no exception. If you haven't heard them yet, we'd encourage you to go back and check them out on the Prodigal app.
Next week, we begin a brand new sermon series called Sins of Suburbia. Check out this quick clip.
The suburbs.
The home they've always dreamed of. The happiest investment they have ever made. Distinctive architectural details create a lovely setting that enhance the pleasure of entertaining. This is how American families are living in their new home.
Sunday, April 7th is also Baptism Sunday. This is one of our favorite Sundays of the year. If you are interested in getting baptized or just want more information, you can let us know by sending us a message or an email.
Small groups are launching next week, and it is not too late to sign up. All the details for our spring groups will be found on the app or the website. Some of those groups begin next Sunday, so don't miss out. Sign up today.
We have a few things on the calendar that we want to tell you guys about, like our Mother's Day service coming up on May 12th and our annual church barbecue on May 19th.
And that signups are live for this year's Kids Camp, July 8th through the 11th. It's going to be a week-long party for the kids, and it is for kindergarten through sixth grade. Head to the app or the website. All the details are there, and sign up.
Our summer internship is now taking applications for high school and college students. This is a great opportunity to serve and learn and grow working alongside the Prodigal staff this summer. You can fill out the application online today.
If you are newer to Prodigal, we would like to invite you to head to our app. And if you don't have that downloaded, go ahead and do so. It's Prodigal Church Fresno. And fill out the digital connect card. This is one way we can keep you informed and up to date on all things Prodigal.
Immediately following our service today is our annual Easter egg hunt. It's being put together as we speak. We're so excited to see the joy and excitement on your kids' faces.
So make sure you check your kids out of their classrooms and head out there, and thank you to everyone who helped to make it possible. We're so glad you're here and decided to join us today. Hoppy Easter, Prodigal.
You did say hoppy. Happy Easter, Prodigal.
Yes, Jesus Christ is alive. He rose from the dead, and that day, that Easter Sunday morning, that first Easter, when Mary and Mary Magdalene and Salome went to the grave expecting to anoint a dead body, they saw the angel sitting there. And they said, "Where is Jesus?" The angel said, "He is not here, he is risen." I submit to you tonight that that's the greatest news the world has ever heard. He is not here. He has conquered the grave. He's alive. And the whole early church went up and down the country preaching the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That was the thing that shook the Roman Empire. That a man had risen from the dead. That he was alive. That death could not hold him. Christ is alive. He's a living Savior.
Behold the Lamb upon that cross, who takes away the sins of all. Forgiveness flows from hands and feet as violence meets the Prince of Peace. Behold the slain, lying in a rose the love, his dying plea. Behold the grace of Calvary, the rugged cross, soon to be the emblem of a risen King. Oh, behold the King, Light of the world, Lamb that was slain, Lion who rose, mighty to save. No enemy can hold you down, 'cause there's nobody in the grave now. One head gets to wear that crown, 'cause there's nobody in the grave now. No enemy can hold you down, 'cause there's nobody in the grave now. One head gets to wear that crown, 'cause there's nobody in the grave now.
Matthew 28:1-10. After the Sabbath, at the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and her other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples. He has risen from the dead and is going to ahead you to Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you. So the woman hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. Greetings, he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. They will see me there.
I remember when my kids were little and Sarah went out of town for 2 days. My number one priority was to keep them safe, okay, of course. But my number two concern was to make sure that Sarah knew that I was handling it and that I was handling it with ease. Okay, nothing was going to slip through the cracks. Not only would the kids be bathed, clean, with cute outfits on, but all of the household chores would be done to perfection. Okay? This wasn't demanded or even expected of me, but it was my goal for those 2 days that she was gone. Okay? And things aren't going quite as I had planned. Okay? The kids are fine, but the house isn't quite as tidy as I had hoped. Okay? But Sarah isn't home till 5 p.m., and so I've got time to kind of stage the house before she arrives to show her that I've had things perfectly under control the entire time. That's when the doorbell rings. I'm holding Ivy, okay, I'm trying to Swiffer the floor, and a salesperson is at the door with a box of chocolates to sweeten the deal to whatever he is selling. And he's there to tell me about a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get in on some cable, landline, telephone, Wi-Fi bundle package. And after the initial spiel, and me looking panicked because the clock is ticking and I still gotta do the laundry, he says, seems like I caught you at a bad moment. Is this the wrong time? Yeah, man, like, it's not a great time. No problem. When can I come back and you have time to talk? And now, I'm reeling, right? Because I didn't expect there would be a follow-up question. Okay. And so, when would be the best time to talk to me about a landline and basic cable package? 20 years ago? That's what I'm thinking, right? I didn't say that, but I explain my situation and I decline the offer, and then he goes and knocks on the door next to me. That's what Easter feels like for some people. Here I am, barging into your life like a door-to-door salesman, here to tell you about this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, which has the potential to sound to you as outdated and unhelpful as a landline telephone, a relic of the past, a relic so old that you're surprised there's still people peddling it. And look, the guy at my door, he didn't want to offer me chocolates. He wanted my credit card number and an annual contract. And here I am with Easter eggs at the church and a smile. And you're like, I don't care that you gave me church donuts or a free cup of church cured coffee. And I don't care that you don't even seem completely crazy on the surface. You're here to talk to me about a first century Jewish peasant who rose from the dead sometime around the turn of the first century. And that resurrection means something for me right here and right now. That's the gist, right? Well, why don't you just leave the chocolates at the doorstep? Because that sounds about as helpful as basic cable. That's how Easter can and does feel to so many people. Now, I'm not trying to sell you anything. There's no sales pitch. Now, I'm 43 years old, okay, educated, relatively well-read, mentally healthy, I think, and for the last 30 years, I based my entire life on an idea that an ancient, uneducated, not particularly well-read Jewish peasant rose from the dead. And I do know how that sounds. But one of the things that distinguishes Christianity from every other faith movement is that it traces its origins to a specific event. That's not true for Judaism or for Buddhism or for Islam. That event, for us, is called resurrection. And I don't believe in resurrection because of logic or reasonable arguments. Okay, that's part of it. There are Christians who studied the historicity of the resurrection and then came to believe in that manner. But I contend that most of the biggest decisions that we make in life are not made with intellect alone. Instead, we have these moments of clarity. You were at an old friend's wedding with your girlfriend. It was a slow dance. You remember the song at the reception, and it hits you that you love her. And every other plan that you had for your life slid into second place when her face came into focus that night. Or that one drive to the coast when you knew you finally had the nerve and the courage to move to the big city. That it may mean a dramatic failure, but dramatic failure based on risk was a risk that you just had to take. Or that one meeting with your boss where you left thinking, I'm leaving and I'm starting my own thing. And I know it means risking my security, my vocational path, but staying here for another year means risking my soul. Who you love, where you live, and what you do, if you are lucky enough to have a choice in any of those, you did not make that choice through analytical thinking alone. There was a moment when it clicked, and here you are. And so, yes, I believe that an ancient, uneducated rabbi from the first century rose from the dead. But it's not because I saw the documentary or because I read the book. It's because there was a time in my life when the story of Jesus intersected with the story of John. And Jesus awoke something in me that hasn't gone back to sleep. It was a week before my 9th birthday when the Berlin Wall fell. November 9th, 1989. I remember the footage from the news that week. The wall of division and oppression had fallen, and shortly after, on Christmas that same year, Leonard Bernstein composed a performance of Beethoven's 9th Symphony, Ode to Joy, right there on the rubble of the wall. He assembled musicians from East and West Berlin. They were kept from even sharing sheets of music together for over 3 decades. Those divided came together, and it was globally broadcasted. And the hair on the backs of 1,000 necks stood on end as hope rose from the rubble below. Okay, what is that? Is that just a fool waving a conductor's wand among unimaginable evil? Or is it a courageous act of hope, pulling back the veil to reveal a truer story than the tragic one that had been told for 3 decades? Is that senseless romanticism, or is it a profound moment of clarity? Where do you build your life? On the reality of the rubble, or on the moment of hope that pierced through the fog of darkness that tells a better story? I wager on hope. So you can relax, okay? I don't want your credit card information. I do believe that the resurrection of Jesus is the most decisive and consequential moment in all of human history. But it's not because I bought the spiel, but because that event intersected with my own life story. It was much more like the sound of hope rising from the rubble of a broken wall. It was a profound moment of hope that pierced through the fog of darkness of my own life, and it told a better story. And I want my life to tell a better story. My kids are 6 and 10, and we still play from time to time hide and seek. But when they were young, we used to play hide and seek all the time. And you know, in hide and seek, you don't want to be found. The goal is to have the best hiding spot. And once the game is over, you want everyone to know where you hid because it was such a good spot. You don't want to be discovered. You want to reveal. Guys, this is where I was the whole time. You guys walked right past me. Have you guys seen these guys before?
Gone with the
They call themselves Siegfried and Joy, and they are street magicians from Germany. And they have taken the world by storm with their hilarious acts featured all over social media. Okay, they have one bit, one. They have this elaborate magician costumes, and they make people or large objects disappear with their magic golden sheet. And they always have like a Celine Dion song playing for some reason. And the best part of their performances is not that they are talented musicians, which they are. The best part of their performances is not the people watching. Okay? The best part of their performances is that the people become part of the act. They become part of the show. By their astonished faces and joyous smiles, they become part of the show when they make themselves disappear. And it's hysterical. And then it gets even better because it's not just the people with them live and in person that get involved in the magic, but the people at home watching their videos, they get involved too. Inspired by Siegfried and Joy, now there are thousands of people doing their own magic tricks all over the world and bringing about more joy. Okay, check out this video.
It was gone with the wind, but it's all coming back to me. It's all coming back, it's all coming back to me now. There were moments of gold and there were flashes of light. There were things we could never do again, but then they'd always seem right.
People on the other side of the planet, after simply watching a video, they too become part of bringing astonishment and joy in their own context. I love that. Siegfried and Joy show the absurdity of trying to hide. Okay? And it's funny, but sometimes our hiding isn't a comedy. In the brutally honest memoir of a guy named Joseph Nass, he describes a heart-wrenching day early on in his life. When he was 12 years old, he was staying over at his friend Colin's house. And they had gone out to the movies and ate pizza and made root beer floats. And the next day was a Saturday and Colin's family's all there and everyone is laughing and eating pancakes together. And then Colin's mom drove Joseph back home to the fake house that he had picked out for the pretend life that he told everybody he had. And she had driven him home plenty of times before, and every time Joseph would walk up to this house, he would wait at the front door till he saw the car pull away, and then he would walk a mile down the road to the house that he actually lived in. But on this day, when she was driving him home, there was a problem. As they pulled up to that house, there was a family that was obviously not his, playing in the front yard. And she just stopped the car in front of the house, and both of them sat there in silence for a minute. As she tried to make sense of all that was happening, and he tried to hide the tears that were welling up behind his eyes, Colin's mom says, "Where do you actually live, Joseph?" He lived in a nearby housing project with a single mom who was a low-functioning addict. And the building they lived in was just on the edge of the school district. He went to school with all the suburbanites, those who had a white picket fence, a dog, and ate pancakes and laughed on Saturdays. And so he pretended that he had all of those things as well. "Where do you actually live, Joseph?" she asked from the driver's seat of her Mercedes coupe. And he acted like he didn't hear it. And he said, "Thanks for the pizza," and got out of the car before she could see him crying. And then he writes, years later, "As I walked away, I thought of how I would never see her again, and how I'd never sleep over at Collins again. Not after what had just happened. Not now that she knew." The impulse to hide, to cover up our real selves, our weaknesses, our impervious soul that refuses to truly ever be seen. There is a hiding that happens within us. And it started in the book of Genesis in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve hiding what they did and then hiding from their God. And we've been hiding ever since. We can get all dressed up and show up to Easter service for all to see. And yet, we're still hiding. We can post on Instagram all of the fun things we did over spring break, revealing our every location, every hour of the day, and yet, we're still hiding. We're still playing hide and seek. Perhaps we never grew up. Maybe we just got better at hiding. We hide the deepest part of who we are, our deepest longings, and we try to fill that longing with all kinds of things that don't quite work. We thought that by now we've had things figured out, but we're not thriving, we're coping. And we use all of these things to cope. And the thing about coping mechanisms is that they work. Almost. Psychologist Vincent Felitti says this: it's hard to give up something that almost works. In what Genesis named fig leaves, almost works. Escaping almost works. Hiding behind what makes me feel okay, what makes me feel in control, almost works. Throwing myself into my career, throwing myself into my kids, or filling my social calendar, or my reputation, or my appearance, or a bottle of something strong, all of it almost works. Pick your poison, but it almost works. But it doesn't work. And you can admit that in desperation, or you can admit it in honesty. Whatever you use to cope almost works, and it's hard to give up something that almost works. We're grown-ups, and we cope, and we hide, like a 12-year-old sitting shotgun in Colin's mom's car. We hide. And the resurrection of Jesus tells us that what is hidden doesn't win. There's a troubling rumor going around nowadays that the Bible ends with God sweeping up all of the believers to a faraway paradise. Like the world is this sinking ship and you can load up on this lifeboat if you hear the news in time. And if that's what you've been looking forward to, I'm sorry to disappoint, but that's just not the story. See, the juxtaposition at the heart of the Bible is the renewal of this world, not the beginning of a different world in some faraway place. God isn't so much trying to get people into heaven, but trying to get heaven into people. There's about a dozen explanations of the resurrection of Jesus in the book of Acts, and not a single one of them centers on going to heaven instead of hell. And the surprise of Easter morning is not that there is hope some faraway place in the next life. The reality of Easter morning is that there is hope in this life. Now, today, resurrection isn't only about security after death. It's about meaning and purpose and hope. Now, resurrection doesn't mean happily ever after. Resurrection means afraid, but filled with joy. Like the women at the tomb that first Easter. Jesus never promised us an exemption from pain and suffering. Instead, Jesus offers us that your present reality is not your permanent reality. We celebrate Easter not just if everything is going great in our life. We celebrate Easter because we know that something better is coming. The resurrection declares that the worst moment is not the last moment. That's the gospel. The Son of God was nailed to a cross. He was put in a sealed tomb. Heaven went silent. The worst thing that could have happened, happened. But Sunday was coming. I read an anonymous quote that I think just might speak to us in our lives right now. First, I was dying to finish high school and start college. Then I was dying to finish college and start working. And then I was dying to marry and have children. And then I was dying for my children to grow old enough for school so that I could return to work. And then I was dying to retire. And now I'm just dying. And suddenly I realize I forgot to live. Perhaps you too have found yourself in this haze of life. And my encouragement for us today on Easter Sunday is that the hope of resurrection might move you to live with greater purpose, greater joy, greater life, greater love. May the risen Christ stir something greater within your life and heart today. God, we thank you for the resurrection. I pray that we would live a better story, a story of hope, of purpose, of peace, of compassion, of mercy, of grace, of love. Jesus, we thank you that you conquered sin and grave, and that God, there's no more hiding. God, that you know all of the things that we have hidden and all of ourselves that we have hidden. And you love us. We are enveloped in your amazing love. Thank you, Jesus. We give you this day and beyond. In your name, amen. We want to thank you so much for joining us on Resurrection Sunday at Prodigal Church Fresno. Wherever you are watching from, whether it's in the UK or in Saudi Arabia or in Brazil or in Ohio, we just want to let you know that you are a part of Prodigal Church. And if you ever want to say what's up or get connected in person or through email, you can shoot us an email at prodigalchurchfresno@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you and what God might be doing in your context through our church. We hope you have an amazing Easter Sunday with family and friends. Grace, peace, and He is risen.